Good morning. We meet today in a kind of chaos. Fortunately, counsel are here, and all the judges except Judge Sparks are physically present. Judge Sparks is going to participate by having sat on Independence Avenue for I don't know how long. Judge Sparks is going to participate by telephone. And the rest of us are here. So the first case is Steen. Is the appellant ready to argue?
Yes, Your Honor.
The government?
Yes, Your Honor.
Appellant may argue.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Carolyn Bray, and I represent Petty Officer Steen. I respectfully request to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Could you speak up a little?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
In Petty Officer Steen's trial, the military judge admitted messages where Petty Officer Steen said he needed bud and green and that he enjoyed using marijuana. These messages were inflammatory, irrelevant, and they were used for an improper propensity purpose, turning what was a battle of credibility between Petty Officer Steen and Seaman into a trial about whether Petty Officer Steen was a drug user. The military judge instructed the members that they could consider facts not in evidence, and that they could use the messages for a propensity purpose. The government did not certify the issue of admissibility. The only question before the court today is whether the erroneous admission of these text messages was prejudicial. Petty Officer Steen suffered prejudice because these messages were material, high-quality evidence, and new ammunition that the government used to unfairly tip the battle of credibility in their favor. We respectfully ask this court to vacate Petty Officer Steen's conviction. The military judge said that the members could consider the text messages as evidence that Petty Officer Steen had a supply of marijuana that he needed to replenish. In other words, that Petty Officer Steen had obtained marijuana at some point before his meeting with Seaman Apprentice Harris, even if he never intended to sell it to him in the first place, and that because he needed marijuana 4 days later, he must have sold it. But the government never proved that this supply existed. The instruction allowed the members...
Counsel, I'm sorry, but I'm really having trouble understanding you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Could you speak closer to the mic?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
No worries, Your Honor. The instructions allowed the members to...
That's better.
Yes, Your Honor. The instructions allowed the members to consider the text messages as evidence of a pattern that Petty Officer Steen obtained marijuana, sold it, and then wanted to replenish that marijuana, and that he acted within that pattern on the day of the alleged sale and 4 days later. The military judge, like in U.S. v. Matthews, admitted the evidence on an incorrect legal basis and submitted the evidence to the members with erroneous and ambiguous instructions. The limiting instructions tells the members that they should not use the text messages to consider Petty Officer Steen as a bad person or someone with general criminal tendencies. But this was vague and did not stop the members from using the text messages to consider that Petty Officer Steen was acting within a pattern of buying and selling marijuana and that he needed to replenish it. We must presume that the members followed this instruction and considered evidence not proven at trial and used it for an improper propensity purpose, an improper propensity purpose that attacked Petty Officer Steen's credibility, which he relied on in his defense.
Okay, the issue here is prejudice.
Yes, Your Honor.
The government concedes this was error. On the part of the military judge. Am I correct?
You're correct, Your Honor. The government did not certify
right.
The issue of responsibility.
Given that this was a special court-martial, and he got 15 days of 15 days confinement, a bus to E1 and a BCD, how much room for prejudice is there here?
Well, Your Honor, this was about...
Don't you have to show that without this, the result might have been different?
No, Your Honor, the burden is on the government to show that the erroneous admission of the text message...
Didn't prejudice him, right. Okay, I'm saying... Given that this is a special and he got, if not a derisory sentence, a light one, how much room for prejudice is there here?
Your Honor.
How was, you know, tell me how he was prejudiced.
There's lots of room for prejudice. Petty Officer Steen was convicted when he put his credibility on the line in a manner that where he was arguing that he was innocent, that he deserved no punishment whatsoever, and that credibility was unfairly attacked with the admission of these text messages that were inflammatory and were used for an improper propensity purpose. In applying the United States v. Kerr factors, the government has failed to meet its burden that this error was harmless. The Kerr factors derive from United States v. Weeks and United States v. Lewis. Factor one is about whether the government's case was strong and conclusive. All three judges on the lower court agree that the government's case was not overwhelming. The government relied on the questionable credibility of Seaman Apprentice Harris, the credibility that defense was able to attack with evidence that he may have lied about not knowing anyone else in Virginia from whom he could buy marijuana, that he did lie about including Petty Officer Steen in his email to the Virginia Beach Police, and that he had a significant motive to lie in avoiding criminal charges and in getting the general discharge that he hoped for. This case is not conclusive, like the towering evidence in United States v. Lewis, where there were four unimpeached eyewitnesses.
Counsel, I'd like to focus your attention on the majority opinion here. The majority says the instruction in the government's argument invited the members to presuppose that appellant had a supply of marijuana, tended to show that he depleted this ghost supply, gave a judicial nod to the members to assume facts not in evidence, but then the majority flips and says, but the instruction limited them from considering the evidence as propensity evidence, thus minimizing prejudice. What's your reaction to the majority's?
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. The limiting instruction was vague. It did not say that they could not use the messages for a propensity purpose. It said that they couldn't use them to consider Petty Officer Steen as a bad person or someone with general criminal tendencies. And the judge did instruct that they could use the messages improperly to consider that Petty Officer Steen was acting within a pattern of buying and selling marijuana, something that the government did not prove. So the limiting instruction was like that in U.S. v. Matthews. It was insufficient to correct the error.
Can I ask a follow-up question then?
Yes, sir.
In regard to Judge Brubaker's dissent, is there anything in that dissent that you disagree with?
No, Your Honor.
Is there anything that you think Judge Brubaker failed to include that, from your perspective, should have been included?
The only thing I may suggest is Judge Brubaker focused on how the instruction allowed the members to consider facts not in evidence, and that was prejudicial, and I agree. I also would add that the instruction allowed the members to consider the text messages for a propensity purpose, an impermissible propensity purpose. Turning back to the United States v. Kerr factors, the government also fails to meet its burden under the second Kerr factor. U.S. v. Weeks and U.S. v. Lewis ask if the defense case was weak or implausible. Petty Officer Steen's defense was plausible. Seaman Hind, the only witness with no motive to lie, testified several times that he believes he sent the text message to Petty Officer Steen in early November, which is when he says he received that text message. Petty Officer Steen put his credibility on the line, and his defense had the same amount, if not more, corroboration as the government story. Both stories had issues, and it should have been up to the members to decide how they weighed those issues. But the battle of credibility was unfairly tipped, and the members received a distorted view of Petty Officer Steen's credibility when he was made out to have a character for drug use and was made out to be someone who acted within that character by buying and selling marijuana. In applying the third care factor, this evidence was material. Petty Officer Steen and Seaman Apprentice Harris's credibility was material, and which witness the members believed was determinative to the case. The evidence was used to argue that Petty Officer Steen's story was not believable because he used drugs and he needed to replenish those drugs. The messages were inflammatory and confused the issue about whether Petty Officer Steen was on trial for the single incident of selling marijuana to Seaman Apprentice Harris or if he was on trial for being a perpetual drug user. The military judge condoned using facts not in evidence, facts that directly undermined the material issue of Petty Officer Steen's credibility. These text messages were also high-quality evidence because of how they were repeatedly presented before the members. Repetition can be persuasive and make certain evidence stand out. The government was able to cross-examine Petty Officer Steen and force him to admit on the stand that he sent the messages. The government was able to recross Petty Officer Steen after he tried to rehabilitate himself. The government was able to call a second witness to explain how the text messages were taken off of his phone. And the government was able to argue in closing that Petty Officer Steen was not believable because of his character for drug use. Finally, a copy of those messages went back into the deliberation room with the members to read as often as they wanted. The government has failed to satisfy its burden that these text messages were harmless. They were high quality material evidence and new ammunition that the government would not have had if they had not been able to get these text messages admitted improperly. There was no other evidence other than these text messages that Petty Officer Steen said he enjoyed marijuana or that he was familiar with marijuana and able to use words like bud and green. There was no other way that the government could have argued that there was this pattern that he would buy and sell marijuana. In a battle of credibility, the government was able to unfairly tip the scales, bolster their case, and label Petty Officer Steen as a drug user with unproven propensity evidence. We respectfully ask this court to vacate Petty Officer Steen's conviction.
Counsel, can we go back to the question of what the issue before us is? The granted issue seems to talk about prejudice, but the government's brief, the first half of their brief, is all about whether there was an error or not. And you addressed whether that was an error or not in the reply brief. Is that just off the table?
Your Honor, a lower court's ruling normally becomes law of the case if an opposing party does not certify that decision. But the law of the case doctrine is discretionary. And if this court would like, I can file a motion for supplemental sources to U.S. v. Parker and U.S. v. Williams that explain that the law of the case doctrine should be applied unless the lower court's decision is found to be clearly erroneous. And the Coast Guard Court of Appeals' lower decision was not clearly erroneous, Your Honor. So the only question before the court today is whether the erroneous admission of these text messages was prejudicial.
Counsel, since you have an extra 5 minutes, and this is contrary to what you just said, but imagine just for the purpose of argument that we did consider that issue. How does this case square with Trimper and Maxwell? The government says it's more like Trimper, and you say it's more like Maxwell. Why is it more like Maxwell?
It's more like Maxwell, Your Honor, because Petty Officer Steen did not make a broad collateral assertion on direct examination, and he did not respond to a specifically tailored question on cross-examination. So the government should not be allowed to extract broad collateral assertions similar to U.S. v. Maxwell to introduce otherwise inadmissible evidence.
What about the idea that the military judge just sort of thought that, interpreted the language, I've never come up hot on your analysis, I've never been positive on your analysis, to mean I don't have any involvement in drugs, and allowed the statements in on that ground. Do we have to give deference to the military judge's interpretation of, I mean, we know what he said, and he didn't exactly say he had no involvement in marijuana. But it seemed like the military judge interpreted it that way. Do we have to give deference to the, again, if we were to reach this issue, would we have to give deference to the military judge on how the military judge interpreted that statement?
Your Honor, I don't have any case law in front of me that I might be able to rely on to answer that question. But if you'd like me to file a supplemental brief, I can do so in terms of deference. But I will say that at best, the testimony that Petty Officer Steen never tested positive for marijuana would only open the door to a very narrow rebuttal to prevent this assumption that he had no involvement with marijuana in the Coast Guard. This would only open the door to the government being able to cross-examine him and ask him, did you send these text messages 4 days after the fact? It does not open the door under Trimper to admitting substantive, specific, extrinsic evidence and allowing a 404B instruction that the members could assume facts, not in evidence. If there are no further questions from the court.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel for the government.
Good morning, Chief Judge Stuckey and judges of the court. May it please the court, I'm Lieutenant Nicholas Hathaway, and along with Mr. Mark Jameson, I represent the United States. The United States asked this court to affirm the judgment of the lower court because appellant was not prejudiced as the text message evidence did not have a substantial influence on the members. Now first, assuming the text message evidence in Prosecution Exhibit 5 was admitted in error, the government has met its burden to show the evidence was harmless. In U.S. v. Amin, this court articulated the standard to determine prejudice for a non-constitutional evidentiary error, and that standard is to determine whether an errant admission had a substantial influence on the members. And in this case, it did not, Your Honor, because the four Kerr factors weigh in favor of the government. Now first, the government had a strong case. Seaman Apprentice Harris testified that on board base Portsmouth, he bought marijuana from the appellant. He testified and was corroborated by the video evidence that shows him walking from the cutter down the pier, meeting appellant, driving to the exchange, withdrawing money from the ATM, getting back into the car, and the video evidence does not show the actual exchange, but it does show them going to Seaman Apprentice Harris's vehicle and him putting something inside his vehicle, exactly as Seaman Apprentice Harris testified. The main contention from appellant here is that Seaman Apprentice Harris was not credible, but that is belied by the evidence, Your Honors. And primarily,
well, let's visit that issue a little. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Let's visit that issue a little bit. It was a situation where he lied about knowing anyone else from whom he could get drugs. Isn't that accurate?
That's accurate, Your Honor.
And as soon as law enforcement stopped him, he immediately wiped his phone, which is not a typical response to being stopped by someone. And weren't his emails with his girlfriend rather odd and incriminating in some ways?
Your Honor, his emails were with his girlfriend addressed other issues that he certainly was impeached on, as well as the potential for getting marijuana from an alternate source, but they didn't address the issue of the charged acts. And the issue of the charged acts is where I think the government's case is strong here. And it's strong because Seaman Apprentice Harris told Coast Guard Investigative Service agents on November 9th, before he had any incentive to fabricate because of a deal with the convening authority, that he had gotten the marijuana from appellant, from Petty Officer Steen. And that was the same day, or the day after, excuse me, that he had been stopped by the Virginia Beach Police Department and, you know, this whole sort of event had unfolded.
Now, in terms of the video, you were citing the fact that the video tends to corroborate his testimony, but couldn't it also be seen as the innocent, as corroboration of the innocent explanation that was provided by appellant?
Certainly, Your Honor. Appellant doesn't, he stated that all that was accurate. So I do agree at that point. I think that goes, we can address that in the second Kerr factor, because appellant's testimony also has significant credibility issues, or he has significant credibility issues.
When you're saying that he didn't have any reason to finger appellant, but didn't he have an incentive to identify someone as his dealer in order to get a favorable plea deal?
There's no evidence of that in the record, Your Honor. And so no, and the reason I also say no is that his entire purpose in going about obtaining marijuana was to obtain a exit from the Coast Guard. He testified to that at page 83 and 84 and 82 of the joint appendix. And his intent was to purchase marijuana and get caught and be tested positive. So there was no reason for him to, you know, finger anyone necessarily. He just responded, and obviously the government's view truthfully, to the Coast Guard Investigative Service agents who were questioning him. And the joint appendix also doesn't reflect that there was any animosity or motive outside, you know, the deal he had with the commuting authority to finger appellant. They were had a mentor-mentee relationship, as he testifies to. It was a professional relationship, and certainly appellant in his testimony doesn't provide or doesn't show that, you know, Seaman Apprentice Harris hated him or there was any, again, animosity between the two. So there was no motive at the time on November 9th when he told Coast Guard Investigative Service agents about Petty Officer Steen for appellant to want Petty Officer Steen to get in trouble.
Well, I thought those days were past when we had guys like I was, like I used to run into over in Southeast Asia when I was on active duty, who would go out and get busted just so they could get discharged. Of course, in those days, all you could get was a general discharge. But it seems like he's got an incentive. He hates the Coast Guard and he wants out of it. And doesn't that give him an incentive to finger Steen? And isn't the whole thrust of these text messages where you talk about, where you use slang terms for marijuana and inquire about its availability, inherently prejudicial?
To your first point, Your Honor, it's not an incentive for Seaman Apprentice Harris to tell someone else because he wants to get, tell the Coast Guard Investigative Service agents that someone else in the Coast Guard had given him marijuana.
He didn't conjure it up out of the air, and presumably he didn't have a little garden on board the cutter, so he got it somewhere. If he wants out and he doesn't mind getting busted and he doesn't mind getting a UOTHC or whatever he got, isn't that a situation where he's got to finger somebody? He talks to the investigative service. The first thing they're going to say is, where'd you get it? And he's got to have some story. He can't just say, I found it in the bathroom. That isn't going to work.
Certainly, Your Honor, and I take your point. I'll just say there's no evidence in the record in the joint appendix that shows he had any motive to do that, specifically to Petty Officer Steen, as opposed to...
Well, he may... Steen was handy, wasn't he?
I take your point, Your Honor. You do take your point. As to your second question, that goes to the materiality and quality of the evidence here. And the materiality and quality of the evidence, both those factors incur both favor the government. There are multiple ways to assess the materiality of evidence in this analysis that this court has articulated. The first was in U.S. v. Amin, where the court said if evidence was found nowhere else in the record, it was not harmful new ammunition. Now, this evidence was evidence of Petty Officer Steen's involvement and desire to obtain marijuana. And that's not new ammunition because there was other evidence of that same thing. Also on the phone of Petty Officer Steen was a Google search for marijuana. On October 22nd, before the charged acts, he searched, quote, Newport News weed seller, buy, sell, trade, classifieds, backpage.com. That's at 304 and 461 in the joint appendix, Your Honors. So that's other evidence that appellant was interested in obtaining marijuana, just as the text messages show appellant was interested in obtaining marijuana.
Counsel, that's not really a fair description of the text messages, is it? I mean, you put these text messages on page 2 of your brief in the introduction paragraph of the statement of facts, right? Now, why did you quote them right there? Because it's not chronological. The text messages come at the end of the statement of facts story if you're going to do it chronologically. Why did you think it was important to put them right in the first paragraph on page 2?
Your Honor, the purpose there was to simply highlight what the issue was before the court, and so the court could understanding this is what was said and this is what the evidence was that was admitted and that allegedly prejudiced appellant.
Because it seems like they're up there especially because they're inflammatory, and you want the court to know on page 2 that he's a bad guy, right? I mean, you're quoting him, right? I need to stop, but I truly enjoy it. Stating, I want to smoke. Right? Like, those don't have anything to do with his desire to buy or sell or have marijuana. Those are just his personal, the way he feels about marijuana, right?
Certainly those text messages are, Your Honor, you're correct. Repeated throughout the series of texts with his friend was the desire to obtain marijuana, and there are multiple texts checking in and alluding to trying to obtain marijuana. But you take your point, Your Honor, that those specifically, you're right, those are obviously not about obtaining marijuana. The Google search, though, does show an interest and involvement with marijuana. And in Yameen, the purpose was to show a subject matter an interest that was not present anywhere else in the record. And in Yameen, it was about child porn, essentially. And that wasn't present anywhere else in the record, and other than the charged acts. And this court said, that's new ammunition. We're not going to allow that. Here, the Google search is evidence of interest in marijuana and an attempt to obtain marijuana.
Counsel, may I ask you the same question I asked of appellant's counsel? Because it seems to me a fairly striking part of the majority opinion, so the opinion that was in support of your position. The majority says from the CCA, the instruction in the government's argument invited the members to presuppose that appellant had supplied marijuana, tended to show that he had depleted this ghost supply, and gave a judicial nod to the members to assume facts not in evidence. But then the majority goes in the opposite direction and says, but the instruction limited them from considering the evidence as propensity evidence, thus minimizing prejudice. That part of the CCA opinion has kind of a flavor of, other than that, how was the play, Mrs. Lane? I mean, what are we to make of that argument by the majority?
Yes, Your Honor. That's not quite accurate with regard to how the instruction was given to the members.
So you're saying the CCA was not accurate?
Yes, Your Honor. I apologize.
The CCA just for the record.
Yes, Your Honor. So at 337 in the joint appendix is the instruction, and I'll quote it. It says, to prove the government's allegation that appellants allegedly needed to replenish his supply of marijuana. And to prove the government's allegation appellant allegedly needed. So it's not that the members are invited to presuppose necessarily the facts are not in evidence. This is the government's arguments that the appellant, you know, had this supply and that he was selling it to Petty Officer Harris or Seaman Prentice Harris and would continue. So the military judge crafted the instruction in such a way as to give the members the choice, as he should have, as to whether believe the evidence or not. And so in that way, the evidence was not giving them an sort of instruction to assume or show the facts that were not there. But that does get to other parts of materiality, Your Honor. And materiality, as stated, it can be shown other ways, in that the government did not directly rely on the text messages to prove any part of the element of the, any element of the offenses. And in Frost, this court said that improperly admitted evidence has substantial materiality when it goes to the heart of the matter in dispute. And in Frost itself, the evidence there was a child victim made a statement to a witness who then testified, a hearsay statement, that her father had touched his penis to her lips. The court found it was inadmissible there because it was evidence of the charged acts themselves. Now here, the text messages are not evidence of the charged acts themselves. They have nothing to say about the actual introduction or the actual sale of marijuana to Seaman Prentice.
Yeah, and which way does that cut? I mean, they're just in there to inflame the members. They don't show anything, but they're there for something, and they're there because they're inflammatory. They're there because they, in the government's estimation, they show that the appellant is a doper who loves the stuff and can't stop. Now, how on earth is that not prejudicial?
Well, Your Honor, it's not prejudicial because this court uses the Kerr factors to assess 404B errant admissions, all the time, and that's the system and the factors this court has laid out to determine whether something is prejudicial in issues and cases like this. And the materiality factor is one of those that this court uses and has said if it doesn't go directly to the elements, then it's not as inflammatory as maybe Your Honor is alluding to. And a couple other ways, so briefly, that this court does assess materiality is whether the government uses their argument, uses the evidence in argument. And here, the trial counsel only briefly mentioned the text in his closing. There, you'll find this in 352 in the Joint Appendix, it was two sentences of a 10-page closing argument. And he did not mention them at all in rebuttal. And this court also asked...
How would he have used them? As the Chief Judge has stressed, it didn't have any relevance. So to say that he didn't use them in his closing, how would he have appropriately used them?
Your Honor, at the time, the military judge had ruled that they were admissible pursuant to 404B and both 608B and C. So he could have used them in a number of ways. He used them in a 404B type purpose, but he could have used them to show that under 608C, appellant was lying about his ability to obtain marijuana, because he said that he didn't actually talk about marijuana with Seaman Apprentice Harris. And he could have used them in a 608B purpose as well. So at the time, and obviously before it went to the CGCCA, he could have used them in three different ways permissibly as the military judge ruled. And finally, Your Honors, in Yameen as well, this court considered whether the members themselves, and I think this gets to your point, Chief Judge Dookie, had asked questions about the text message evidence or any improper...
Now, is the statement by appellant's counsel correct that these texts went into the deliberation room with them?
That's correct, Your Honor. They were admitted in Prosecution Exhibit 5.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll just briefly mention that here the members did ask questions, did not ask any questions about the text. They actually, asked the court to call back members, call back witnesses. They called back appellant and did not ask appellant any questions about the text. If I could get to briefly, Your Honor, the reasons why under the second Kerr factor, appellant's case is weak and implausible, as this court outlined the standard was in Weeks. He testified he was coming on board Bay Portsmouth to drop off a hair care box. There's no other evidence for that other than appellant's statements. He deleted text messages that would show, he was coming on board for, or at least allegedly would show he was coming on board to drop off a hair care box in that the person he was supposed to be giving these to, texted him about mailing instead. And he also did not tell this other Seaman Hind, who the product was supposed to be for, that this arrangement was going to be made. So, Your Honors, under the second Kerr factor, the weak and implausible nature of appellant's case, he relies on assertions that simply don't have a basis in the record, and because he actually did delete some evidence that would have supported his assertions. And finally, Your Honors, the last factor is the quality of the evidence, and this court measures the quality of the evidence according to U.S. v. Fetro. When that evidence has a powerful impact or is emotionally powerful or heartfelt. Fetro was about the testimony from a child victim who cried on the stand with regard to uncharged child molestation. Here the evidence is not comparable to Fetro. At 455, you'll see the actual messages themselves, and it's a dry text message extract that would be hard to read that would be hard to read by the members who are not familiar with a forensic logical extraction. And so it doesn't qualify as quality evidence.
Counsel, before you sum up, the first half of your brief is just about whether there was an error, and appellant argues that that issue is not before us. Do you agree with that?
Your Honor, that issue can be before this court if it desires to address it. This court has the authority to specify its own issues or to consider and decide issues that were not specified or briefed. Wasn't cited in our brief, Your Honor, so I don't want to necessarily rely heavily on it, but in U.S. v. Pinero, This court noted an issue that a lower court had adopted too much of the government brief and remanded to the lower court to correct. That issue was not before the court. It hadn't been briefed. And so that case just shows the expansive authority this court has when determining what issues to address in any given case. And obviously we can provide supplemental briefing or supplemental a motion to cite supplemental authority if the court so desires.
You concede that the admission of the evidence was error?
No, Your Honor. We do not concede the admission of the evidence was error. It was admissible under and pursuant to U.S. v. Trimper, as you asked, appellant counsel, and 404B, Your Honor, and 608C as well, as we noted in our brief.
Judge Sparks, do you have a question?
No, I do not.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Rebuttal.
Your Honor, the heart of the matter in dispute was credibility. It was Petty Officer Steen's credibility and Seaman Apprentice Harris's credibility, and the evidence was material because it went directly towards Petty Officer Steen's credibility. The government had 10 pages of argument, but only a little bit less than half of that was spent explaining why Petty Officer Steen wasn't believable, and the text messages were used to reiterate and emphasize that point. Turning to the Google search, the Google search stands alone without these text messages. The government was never able to prove that Petty Officer Steen even got the marijuana that he sought, and the Google search would have simply been on its own without these messages. There would have been no pattern that Petty Officer Steen wanted to buy and sell and buy and sell marijuana. So this case is exactly like Amin, where this is new evidence, new ammunition that the government would not have had if they had not gotten these text messages impermissibly admitted. Also, the video, again, goes to the point of how this case was a battle of credibility. Petty Officer Steen's story was just as corroborated, if not more, than the government's. And this was about who the members believed. And the members were able to take text messages back into the deliberation room with them that suggested Petty Officer Steen had a character for drug use and that he must have sold these drugs because of that character. These text messages had no other purpose than to be inflammatory. And we respectfully ask this court to vacate Petty Officer Steen's conviction. If there are no further questions from the court.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Judge Sparks?
No, I have none.
Thank you. Case is now submitted. Court thanks counsel for both sides. The court particularly thanks counsel for making it here today in the conditions we have to labor under. Court is in recess until 11:05.